The samples that we looked at were synthesized by Gang Chow, the University of Kentucky, the measurements that we did were at two synchrotrons, the Canadian Light Source and the Advanced Photon Source, where we worked with some excellent instrument scientists, Yongfeng Hu, Zahir Islam, Mary Upton, and Jung Ho Kim. So this is just a brief outline of what I'd like to try and get through over the course of the next 25 minutes or so. I'm going to start with a brief introduction to iridates for those of you who may not necessarily be too familiar with these materials. I'm going to talk a little bit about the undoped parent compound, strontium-214, and in particular the J-effective 1/2 spin orbital not insulating state. Talk a little bit about the previous experimental work that's been done on this rhodium doped system, and then discuss some of our experimental results. So in particular, we used a variety of resonant scattering techniques, so a combination of X-ray absorption spectroscopy to look at how the rhodium in our system is behaving, resonant magnetic X-ray scattering, an elastic scattering technique to look at the effect of doping on magnetic structure, and then resonant inelastic X-ray scattering to look at the effect of doping on the characteristic excitations of the system. Okay, so first things first, why is it that we want to study iridates, and why are we interested in these materials? And our primary motivation is to search for new, potentially exciting, spin orbit driven physics. So as we move from the lighter 3D transition metals down the periodic table to the 5D elements, a few things happen. Our atomic masses get larger, and the spin orbit coupling effects are going to scale like this atomic mass to the power of 4. So the spin orbit coupling energy scale is going to get quite large for iridium and the rest of these 5D transition metals. And the other thing that's going to happen is as the electronic wave functions become broader and more spatially extended, we would expect the electronic correlations, Coulomb interactions, to decrease, and we'd expect the crystal electric field terms to increase. So what's going to happen once we get down in this 5D neighborhood is that, at least approximately speaking, these three energy scales are going to be on roughly equal footing. Okay? So you get potential for interesting competition or interplay. So recently, a lot of interest has been devoted to the study of these 5D materials and 5D iridates. And this is just a sort of an example of three of the families of iridates that seem to be getting among the most attention. So earlier in the previous session, we heard about pyrochlore titanates. There are pyrochlore iridates as well, where the A-site element here can be yttrium or any of the lanthanides. These materials have attracted a lot of interest after theoretical proposals for a variety of topological insulating, topological or Weyl semi-metallic states, and in the case of the praseodymium iridate compound, even an exotic metallic spin liquid state. There's also a popular family of honeycomb iridates here, sodium-213 and lithium-213. These materials have also been associated with topologically insulating states, but most of the interest is focused on potential relevance to the Kataev-Heisenberg model, and our keynote speaker has done some very nice neutron work on these materials. So this is a theoretical model that describes spin 1/2 moments on honeycomb lattice with highly anisotropic exchange interactions. And then the third family, which is going to be the most relevant to the rest of this talk, are these layered perovskite iridates that belong to this Ruddleston-Popper series. So these materials, at least for low end, show this J-effective 1/2 mod-insulating state. And as you vary the N-index here, you go from highly two-dimensional to more three-dimensional materials, and from more insulating to less insulating. So this is the specific material that we're going to be interested in. Strontium-214. So one of the fundamental questions here is why so many iridates turn out to be insulators? Because naively speaking, you would expect that a lot of them should be metallic. Most of these iridates are based on iridium-4+, which has a 5d5 electronic configuration. The electronic wave functions are broad, so you'd expect broad electronic bands. So if we put these iridium-4+ ions in an octahedral oxygen cage, you'd expect something like this, a wide T2G band metal. But as it turns out, a combination of crystal field and large spin orbit coupling terms can bring you to an insulating state, as shown in here. And you can consider this as arising from either a strong crystal field or a strong spin orbit limit. So either you can think of the crystal field as splitting this 5D manifold into T2G and EG states, in which case the spin orbit coupling then is going to break the T2G into fully occupied J effective 3/2 states and a half occupied J effective 1/2 state. Or you can think about this coming from the strong spin orbit limit, where we break this into J 3/2, J 5/2, and then the crystal field is going to lower one of these J 5/2 levels. So this is why it appears that we're breaking Hund's rules, but we're not. Okay? So once we reach this point, even the relatively weak 5D electronic correlations are enough to open up an insulating gap, giving us lower Hubbard and upper Hubbard bands. So this is the compound that we're going to be interested in, strontium-214. This is the N equals 1 member of that Ruddleston-Popper series. It's a tetragonal system, and you can see the crystal structure is shown over here. It consists of these layers of IR06 octahedra, which are corner sharing, and they're rotated with respect to the C-axis by an angle of about 11 degrees, and these rotations are alternating in direction within the planes and along the stacking direction here. The system has a canted anti-ferromagnetic ground state with a relatively high transition temperature. And again, because we're in the strong spin orbit regime, we're looking at a picture where we have a total effective angular momentum of 1/2 rather than a spin 1/2. So due to the structural and magnetic similarities between strontium-214 and both lanthanum cuprate and strontium ruthenate, there's been a fair amount of speculation as to whether it might be possible to reach some sort of exotic or unconventional form of superconductivity in these systems, especially if you start chemically doping. And there's been some very nice theoretical work regarding these possibilities. It's also spurred a number of experimental studies, and you can see here roughly what people have done with strontium-214 so far. So you can see there's been variety of different hole dopings, electron dopings, isoelectronic dopings tried on each of these three sites, strontium, iridium, and the oxygen. To date, nobody has found any evidence of superconductivity, but this does give us a way of probing how this unusual J effective 1/2 state responds to quenched impurities. And for those of you who are really into superconductivity, you can see there's still a lot of elements left for us to try, so don't give up hope yet. So the specific system that we're going to focus on is rhodium-doped strontium-214. And these are some bulk characterization measurements that have been done by Gang Chow's group at Kentucky. So what I'd like to draw your attention to here is the phase diagram on the top left. And you can see as we move from pure iridium-214 to pure rhodium-214, we go through a number of electronic and magnetic phase transitions. So this is actually quite a rich phase diagram. So at low dopings, we quickly suppress magnetic order. We go from an insulating to metallic state, at least at high temperatures. At higher dopings, we go back into an insulating state. Magnetic order seems to reappear at very low temperatures, below about 1 Kelvin. And then at even higher dopings, we enter a paramagnetic, strongly correlated metallic state. And these are just the corresponding magnetization measurements for this low-doped region. You can see, again, that rapid suppression of the Nail temperature and perhaps a slight change in the C-axis, A-axis character of this magnetization. Okay. So in spite of the fact that a fair amount of work has been done on the phase diagram, there's still a lot about this compound that we don't know. And some of it is very fundamental information. In particular, there's still some question as to what the rhodium is actually doing in this system. So on the surface, you might think this should be about the easiest kind of doping we can do. There is a rhodium-214, has the same structure as the iridium-214. The rhodium in there has a 4+ state, and it's just one row above iridium in the periodic table. So in the simplest case, you might expect the rhodium to enter the system in a 4+ oxidation state. This would give it a 4d5 electronic configuration. And in that scenario, we'd just be looking at isoelectronic doping. So this would give us an effective means of tuning the spin orbit coupling of the system, going from the strong spin orbit regime, with the 5d iridium to a more moderate spin orbit regime with the 4d rhodium. And that's shown sort of schematically in these cartoon pictures here, where this would be the parent compound and this would be the rhodium 4 plus dope compound. But those of you who are familiar with rhodium chemistry may know that rhodium 4 plus is actually quite a rare oxidation state. It's much more common for rhodium to adopt a 3 plus oxidation state. So it's also been proposed that the rhodium may enter the system with a 4d6 electronic configuration, in which case you might expect the effect to be a little more complicated. The rhodium 3 plus would be likely to induce some iridium 5 plus to preserve charge neutrality. And then in addition to any spin orbit tuning, you'd also be tuning the band filling, as shown over here on the right. So clearly, there's room for additional experimental work here. So we decided to do a series of resonant scattering measurements on rhodium dope 214 using a series of 7 single crystal samples. So you can see our dopings range from 7% to 70%, and that covers all of the major regions of the phase diagram here. So resonant techniques are actually extremely well suited for the study of iridates. The iridium L edges have a very large resonant enhancement to the scattering cross sections. They have a very user-friendly hard X-ray energy scale. And also, large neutron absorption issues and very small sample sizes make it quite difficult to do these experiments in other ways. So what we're going to do here is use 3 complementary techniques. So we did some X-ray absorption measurements using the soft X-ray microcharacterization beamline, Canadian light source. Resonant magnetic X-ray scattering measurements using Sector 6, the advanced photon source, and then resonant inelastic X-ray scattering measurements using the Merrick spectrometer, also at the advanced photon source. So I didn't label these guys, but you can guess which one is Saskatoon and which one is Chicago. So let's begin with the X-ray absorption measurements. And these are measurements that we were doing, again, to try and look at the oxidation state of the rhodium in our system. So what you can see on the left here are a series of absorption spectra taken at the rhodium L3 edge. So these are measurements that correspond to exciting a 2p core electron into the unoccupied 4d states, and that's an energy of around 3 keV. In the top panel, what I want to draw your attention to is this peaked feature. So this is known as the L3 edge white line. And the white line feature is very sensitive to the oxidation state. So what you can see here is a comparison of different rhodium oxidation states. So we have a series of reference samples going from elemental rhodium all the way to rhodium 4 plus in our strontium rhodate sample. And what you can see is the systematic shift up to higher energies as we increase the oxidation state. The other thing hopefully that you can see is this pink curve here, which is our rhodium dope 214 sample. And this aligns very nicely with our 2 3 plus references. So this would suggest that the rhodium isn't going in a 4 plus state, but the 3 plus state seems to be a better description. In the bottom panel, you can see the doping dependence of our absorption data. And what comes out from this is that that white line feature does not shift as we go from 7% to 70% rhodium. So it looks like we have rhodium in a 3 plus state all the way across that phase diagram until the very end in the parent compound. The pure rhodium case, where you finally get that shift to the 4 plus state. So this would suggest to us that the simple spin orbit tuning picture is not valid for describing these systems, that instead we should be thinking about rhodium as whole doping the system. And there seems to be some recent ARPES measurements that support this. So the next thing we want to look at is what we can learn about the magnetic structure of this compound using our resonant magnetic X-ray scattering measurements. So these are just some measurements done on the pure parent compound. So this is from BJ Kim's group at Argonne. As I mentioned before, the parent compound has a canted antiferromagnetic state in which the J effect of 1/2 moments are constrained within the AB plane. Basically, the direction goes along with the rotation of those IR06 octahedra. So you can see this canted state shown here. It's very sensitive to applied magnetic field. So even at fairly small fields, there's a transition to a different field-induced state where all of the net moments in these canted layers align. Okay? And you can see that our magnetic scattering is going to give us a fingerprint of the ordered state. So these are measurements on our rhodium-doped 214. Up here on the left, you can see basically a series of survey measurements along a high symmetry direction in reciprocal space. We've used polarization analysis here to isolate our magnetic scattering signal. And you can see data here from both 7% and 11% doped samples. So these seem to have the same magnetic reflection conditions. We get peaks at all L equals odd positions along the 10L and 01L directions. We don't see magnetic peaks along other likely high symmetry lines. And this tells us a few things. First off, it tells us that there is a change in magnetic structure when we dope the system. So this is a different reflection condition than what we see in the parent compound. And it also tells us that this is consistent with either the field-induced structure for strontium-214 or the reported structure for manganese-doped strontium-214. These two structures only differ by the direction of the magnetic moment. So it's been reported that you put in about 10% manganese, you flip the spin axis from the AB plane to the C axis. So we can go one step further, and we can determine which of those two states applies to our system by looking both at the L dependence of these magnetic peaks, so modeling the magnetic structure factor, and looking at the azimuthal dependence of our magnetic peaks. So this takes advantage of the high degree of polarization of our X-ray beam at the synchrotron. And as you can see here, hopefully, the azimuthal dependence is very different depending on which direction your easy axis tends to be. And our measurements here are consistent with moments in the AB plane. So this would suggest to us that we do get this change of magnetic structure. So not only is the magnetic structure sensitive to field, it's also sensitive to relatively low doping levels. And we get the same state as this field-induced structure. And it might suggest to you that the rhodium and the manganese seem to have slightly different effects on the system. One of the other things that's interesting to look at is the effect of doping on the J effective 1/2 character of the system. You might wonder how this unusual state responds to the presence of impurities. And one of the experimental signatures of this J effective 1/2 state is a very large branching ratio. So the difference in intensity of the magnetic features you measure at the L3 and the L2 absorption edges. And this is just something that arises as a natural consequence of the selection rules associated with the L3 and L2 transitions. So just to cut to the chase here, what we see in our rhodium-doped samples is an extremely large intensity ratio. So you can see at the L3 edge, we get a very large enhancement. At the L2 edge, there's actually no observable magnetic scattering. So we can put a sort of lower bound, being conservative here, of about 200 on this intensity ratio. So this is similar to what's seen in the parent compound, also similar to what's seen in the manganese-doped compound. So this would suggest to you that this spin orbital state is actually not particularly sensitive to chemical doping, that it seems to survive relatively intact up to at least 11 or 15%. So the other thing that we can do is look at the magnetic phase diagram for this compound. So this is the temperature dependence of magnetic Bragg peaks in our 7% and 11% samples. A few things to point out just quickly. It looks as if our magnetic intensity disappears here at about 45 and 85. But if you look very carefully, you can see still well-defined peaks that persist up to 100 and 150. These two temperature scales actually agree quite nicely with the bulk characterization data. So these temperatures seem to map onto both TN and this kink in the magnetic susceptibility that we'll call TN2. The other thing to point out is that the peaks that we see in this region here, while they are well-defined, they're not resolution limited. So it seems that we have finite magnetic correlation lengths in this state, particularly within the AB plane. So this lets us construct this sort of simple phase diagram here, where I've been a little creative with this phase boundary. But what you can see is we do have this change in magnetic structure, finite range order, long range ordered states, and then this transition to the paramagnetic state with a critical doping that looks to be at around about 17%. So the last thing I'll say on this subject is just that you might ask, what is it that is disrupting our magnetic order? Initially, it was proposed that magnetic order was destroyed When the spin orbit was tuned to the point where you lost the J effective character, the sample went from insulating to metallic, and the order disappeared. But the fact that our J effective 1/2 character seems to be preserved would suggest that maybe something else is going on here. So this is just a, one other possibility would be that you can maybe try and explain this in terms of a percolation type picture. At least as far as the spin 1/2 square lattice antiferromagnet is concerned, our experience from cuprates, and in particular this highly doped manganese and zinc lanthanum cuprate, would suggest that percolation theory provides a really good description of the critical doping for the destruction of magnetic order, which should happen at about 40%. In the case that we introduce rhodium 4 plus to the system, we would expect to be well below this percolation threshold. You'd expect still to have connected clusters here. If you think about it in terms of a rhodium 3 plus and a rhodium 5 plus scenario, then each of your dopant ions is removing two spins from the system, and we're getting a little closer to this percolation threshold. We're still a little bit low, you may notice. This would give us an effective X of about 35%, and quite why there's this discrepancy maybe is an open question. But this is an avenue that we're interested in pursuing. So in the time that's left, I'm just going to talk quickly about our resonant inelastic X-ray scattering measurements on strontium 214. The measurements that I'm showing here are from the parent compound. So this is undoped strontium 214. And these are inelastic X-ray measurements that are being done at the iridium L3 edge. And this is actually sort of a great showcase for sort of as good as we can get with RICS right now. We have energy resolution of about 30 millielectron volts, and you can see a lot of different features in here. So this is a magnon excitation. Up here, you have a spin orbit exciton, sort of strongly spin orbit coupled excitation, and you can see this nice dispersion here. So this is what things look like once we start to dope the system. Again, just to point out the variety of excitations that we can see here, RICS is sensitive to many different excitations. At very low energy transfers, you can see magnons. At more intermediate energies here, at lower dopings, you can see this spin orbit exciton. So this is an excitation that corresponds to exciting an electron from the fully occupied J effective 3/2 states to an empty J effective 1/2 state. And this feature clearly changes as we go from the magnetically ordered to the paramagnetic state. And then up here at higher energy transfers, around 3 electron volts, you can see a second branch of orbital excitation. So these are excitations from the T2G manifold to the EG manifold. So we get a variety of different excitations over a quite large range of energy transfers. So this is just a quick look at the behavior of these excitations in more detail. So shown here are a series of cuts for different dopings, going from 7% through the critical doping here at about 17 into the paramagnetic phase. And you can see what these scans look like both at the zone center and magnetic zone boundary positions. So you can see the strong influence of doping on that spin orbit exciton. And also the influence of doping on the magnon. You can see that it hardens and broadens as we go up to higher dopings. And the other thing that's interesting is to look at the effect of doping, again, on those orbital excitations. So one of the things that's quite unusual about this system is that our T2G to EG excitations do have a significant dispersion. How much time left, Dave? All right, perfect. So this dispersion is something that you don't see in most iridates. It is something that we see in all of our lower doped samples. And as you move up past that critical doping, you can see that not only does the intensity die off rapidly, but also the dispersion more or less vanishes. So this is another thing that would provide you with an indication of the effect of the strong spin orbit coupling. Okay. So with that, I'll just wrap up and leave you with a summary of my conclusions. Again, we've used a variety of different resonance scattering techniques to probe the behavior of these systems. Hopefully I've convinced you that iridates are interesting systems, and in particular, there seems like there's a lot of work that we can do with these doped 214 compounds. Thanks for your attention.
Very nice talk, first of all. I was wondering, in your percolation picture, you would have both iridium 5 plus and rhodium 3 plus.
Yes.
And so one question is, is there a measurement, an absorption, a spectroscopy measurement, I guess you could do, that would be sensitive to the iridium 5 plus?
That could verify that the
right.
5 plus is in
yeah.
there? We should be able to do the same thing. So the L3 edge for iridium should be something that can tell us whether there's 5 plus in the system. And it is something we plan to do. We just haven't gotten around to it yet. So if you asked again in July, I'd be able to tell you.
And a related question, in either of these pictures, the rhodium isn't participating in the magnetism. And so can you tune to a rhodium edge instead of an iridium edge and look to see if
there is magnetic scattering?
Yeah, right.
In principle, we should be able to do that. One of the reasons we haven't is just the rhodium energy scale. So again, the rhodium L3 edge is at about 3 keV. So the soft X-ray energy scale is, it's not impossible, and a lot of people work there, but for the beamlines we were using, we didn't have access.
Yeah, that ends up being a bit of an awkward energy range. There's not a lot of beam lines that are suitable for that specific photon energy, I think. So I had a related question to Bruce's question. So in the cuprates, when you hold the cuprates, the holes go primarily into the oxygen p orbitals, and the valence of the copper when you dope doesn't really change all that much. Is there any evidence for the oxygen p states playing a significant role at all in the iridates?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any. But I would have to look into that and get back to you. Yeah, sorry.
Any additional questions? Okay.
So with increased doping, you showed another magnetic phase coming up.
Right.
I don't know, 60% or something like that doping.
Oh, yeah, so this very low temperature magnetically ordered phase.
So have you been able to look at spin waves from that phase?
The temperature scale is a bit of an issue here. So we can't get into the magnetically ordered phase. Our sort of base temperature with Rix is about 7 Kelvin, and with beam heating at the absorption edge, probably that's effectively 10 Kelvin. But in the past, we've been able to see magnetic excitations well above TC. We don't see evidence of really any magnetic scattering above there. So the only signature that's been found so far really comes from specific heat measurements.
So the magnetic structure is not even known in that phase?
No.
Okay, any additional questions? If not, let's thank the speaker, and let's thank all of today's speakers.